And welcome to another episode of Walk On Red Shirts podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Aaron, and with me, my co-hosts, Jake and intern Gibble. Another week in paradise, that is quarantine, if you want to call it that. And still another 2 weeks have gone by with 10,000 questions about whether we are or are not going to have college football, whether we will have fans or not have fans, and plenty of other stuff. How are you guys doing in these past 2 weeks?
I feel like I'm living in the movie Groundhog Day, and everything is just the same.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much. It's not great. We have the Jordan documentary to break up some of the lack of sports, and we had the NFL draft. But other than that, it's just been a whole lot of nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I was very excited about the draft, obviously. Now that that's over, it's kind of, you know, we're kind of sitting in the nothing really going on. I'm not a big basketball fan. I am going to get around to The Last Dance. Probably when it's all said and done, I'll probably just binge watch through all of it. At some point, I will check that out. But yeah, I mean, it's a couple weeks have gone by. I know nobody else really gives a shit about it, but I'm very excited that this week it was announced that NASCAR will be back here in a week or two. So I'll at least have that to look forward to myself, while the rest of you wait for basketball or whatever else you are into. And really just keeping the fingers crossed that we're going to have college football this year. The closer we get, it seems a little bit more likely that we're going to have it, but still 10,000 questions need to be asked. And where we stand here in a couple months, it is just now turning May. So we do have plenty of time until it comes back around. Outside of that, I've been playing a lot of NCAA 14. No big deal, but I have led Wyoming to a number 6th ranking in the country at the end of the very first season of me coaching.
Scrubs. Now. Absolute scrubs.
Not scrubs. We were scrubs. Ranked 6th. A scrub team happened to win the national championship. Ohio State Buckeyes.
Well deserved. Well deserved. Pat on the back, guys.
Not well deserved at all. But led by quarterback Lionel Richardson, aka Braxton Miller. but yeah, no. So that's what's. Hey, look, all I'm saying is I'm a great coach. I got a 5-star dude that from Miami coming to Wyoming for whatever reason. That was my one big get in recruiting. Decision. Well, nobody else wanted him. Like, I had to fill my boards, and I was like, oh, this 5-star dude, nobody's going after him. I was like, I'll just, convince him to come up here and win a Heisman. You know, fuck it. Let's be legends. But yeah, outside of that, nothing going on with me. Intern Gibble, I'm sure there's probably, you know, tons of news going on in the last couple of weeks. Why don't you hit us with it?
All right. Well, we'll start with the potential start of football. Obviously, we're all hoping for it. There's just a lot that has to happen before fans will be allowed in stadiums. A lot of it comes down to what is going on with the state and federal governments, and what kind of restrictions that they have going on, mostly with the social distancing kind of measures that they have. They also want to make sure that health-wise, people are able to get tested quickly and diagnosed quickly. So that can definitely help in the process. They're also hoping that by the time football rolls around, there's going to be some sort of a cure for it. So there's hope. The Alabama president said that, or AD, one of those two, said that football is going to happen in the fall. So I'm just going to go with what he said, because that's definitely a fact. So we need that.
Good. I've always rested my hopes on the people of Alabama.
I know, right?
These decisions.
They are just the first people you want to turn to for any sort of advice.
He said he expects it, not that it will happen.
No, I heard him say he will. It will.
Did you actually listen to it?
Nope.
So how did you hear it?
This is our news correspondent, folks.
Well, I imagined it. Anyway. Fantastic.
I imagine you won't have an internship next week.
Oh, that's bold. Not too bold.
I have to demote him again.
What's the next step?
Volunteer assistant.
Oh, okay. That has a nice ring to it. Anyway, moving on. The NCAA also announced that players will be able to make money off of their name, image, and likeness. Unfortunately, that means there probably still will not be an NCAA football game like everybody in the planet needs. But what it does mean is that students can kind of make money off of themselves. So they can kind of set up camps. They can kind of promote themselves on social media and different things like that. Same with kind of, they can't really just get money for like from endorsements and stuff. Boosters can't just pay them to come to a school, but they can make money off of themselves and kind of promote themselves in different ways.
Can I correct you before you go too much further?
Yeah, go for it.
It wasn't actually approved. The Board of Governors recommended they move forward with it.
Oh, wonderful. I guess I can't read either.
Apparently not. But it's a step in the right direction, but it's not actually a done deal yet.
Gotcha. Well, glad you're here to fix that.
Just fixing your mistakes everywhere you go.
God. Just gotta clean up after you like you're a toddler.
Yeah, pretty much. That's why I'm the intern. All right. The last thing from the NCAA, at least, is they do not recommend a change to the transfer waiver process, meaning they're not. I'm
proud of you for getting this one right.
I know, right? I just read the headline. It worked better. The idea was that they would grant a one-time transfer waiver to student athletes going from one school to another. That is not recommended to go forward, meaning it would still go through this approval process that we have where if you're a five-star and it looks good for the NCAA, then they'll say yes. Otherwise, it's probably a no. So, you know, great job by the NCAA there. All right. So switching gears a little bit, much more of a negative note. Got stuck with the news, so we got to talk about Dexter Rentz, Louisville football signee, that was going to be going to the program this coming season. He was unfortunately shot and killed in the past 2 weeks. Shaquille O'Neal reached out to help the family and has said that he's going to cover all expenses for the funeral. Whatever they need, he's got them covered. So a little bit of positive news to come out of that. In some transfer news, we've got Virginia acquiring Keaton Thompson. I think I said that right. Former quarterback for Mississippi State. He's going to be joining Virginia this coming season. He still has 2 years of eligibility for Virginia and is going to be eligible right away because he's going to be a grad transfer. We also have Tariq Black transferring from Michigan to Texas. Not sure if he's going to be immediately eligible. He has 2 years of eligibility as well, and actually would also be a grad transfer. So good for both of them. And our last bit of news here is Jaden Hazelwood, Oklahoma wide receiver, unfortunately suffered a knee injury and tore his ACL. So he will be out for the entirety of this coming season if and when it happens.
Yeah, the Hazelwood injury, that's a bit of a hit to Oklahoma's wide receiving core. Obviously, they lose CeeDee Lamb to the NFL draft. Hazelwood was going to step in pretty as one of the key contributors. He did play a little bit last year. They also have a couple other young and upcoming wide receivers as well, so I don't think it's going to be the biggest hit to their roster and talent-wise. but still, nonetheless, they also still have Charleston Rambo coming back this season, who was a big time contributor last year as well. So, definitely tough, a very promising prospect coming up, to miss an entire season like that, especially with an ACL injury. But I think Oklahoma should be okay moving forward in that regard.
Yeah, I agree. They should be pretty good. They have another former five-star, Theo Weiss, who will probably step in there as well, who is expected to play a fair amount this year. But losing Hazelwood does hurt, because I believe he was their second leading return, like leader in receiving yards returning. So losing somebody with that kind of experience does hurt. I know he didn't get a lot of catches in, I guess you could say, big time moments, but he had experience on the field playing in those games, which hurts, like losing that.
Yeah, he's actually the second Sooner receiver to be injured this year. Theo Howard tore his Achilles back in January, so it's kind of wild that they have two out, but Howard is hopeful to be back in time for the season, so that's kind of, that'll be helpful for them there.
Also, to touch on Tariq Black, I think that's a really good pickup for Texas. Again, I don't know if he, when he'll be eligible, if he gets it this year or if it's the year after that, but after losing Devin Duvernay and Colin Johnson this past offseason of the NFL draft, they lost little Jordan Humphreys the year before that, to kind of replenish that wide receiving core with a really good talent like Tariq Black is a big time pool for Texas, and definitely needed on the offensive side of the ball.
All right. So we have one more bit of news here. UNLV has hired Glenn Thomas to be their offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. He is another one that is leaving Baylor after Matt Rhule left for the NFL. He actually had followed Matt Rhule from Temple to Baylor. He spent 2 years at Baylor, or 3 years at Baylor, sorry, 2 years at Temple, and then had 7 years spent in the NFL with a couple different teams like the Falcons, Ravens, and Jaguars. So that should be a good move for UNLV. That should help their offense out pretty greatly. And just another hit for Baylor. So that's all the news we got.
All right.
In other breaking news, Shea Patterson finally signed with a team. He's going to Kansas City.
He's never going to play.
No, because they have former Michigan legend Chad Henne as the backup to Patrick Mahomes. So Shea Patterson not going to make that roster. That's true. It is funny that that's where he ends up going, though, because like, it's like, watch, he'll make the roster or something like that and start in like week 7 when they decide to rest Patrick Mahomes for a week against the Jaguars or something.
Load management.
Yeah. It took what, a week and a half almost about a week for Shea Patterson to finally sign with somebody as an undrafted free agent. So not sure if he had a ton of offers and was working through them, or if nobody offered him, but
I feel like that might have been his first call that he received and only took, you know, a week for him to get it.
It's possible. Who knows? All right. Well, is that all for the news then?
It is indeed.
All right, Jake, I'll send it over to you.
Well, if you missed anything this week, you missed the interview with the GOAT of Iowa football, Ricky Stanzi. Great time. Ricky Stanzi is a great person. Going to try to go up to Cleveland and go to a football, go watch some football with him. Probably not, but maybe I'll get a football ticket from him one day. It helps that he knows people that play for the Browns now. Just gotta try to shoot my shot there. But you can catch Ricky Stanzi, Jonathan Dwyer, and Jonathan Franklin all on YouTube. Gibble, what is our YouTube channel? Is it just called The Walk on Redshirts?
You're just The Walk on Redshirts.
It's not me. It's everybody. And you're the one that manages that.
Correct.
We let him manage something? That seems disastrous.
I know. I figure YouTube is really hard to screw up, so you know, we let him do that one.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's walk on red shirts.
Please don't let it blow up.
Like, do my best.
Bad way. But if you missed any of the interviews, they'll be on there. We've got more coming soon. Think of your favorite college players. There's a chance that I've reached out to them.
Reached out to
a lot of people.
Feel free to shoot suggestions. But keep in mind, preferably guys who were fun or good in college and didn't have an NFL career because they cost money. So
we're looking at you, Tom Bahali.
And we're running on a tight budget of $0 here. So
hey, that's my whole paycheck.
Keep it light.
Yeah, if we ever start making money, you're still not getting any money from it.
I know.
That's because he's an unpaid intern.
If you ever have anybody you would like us to reach out to or like to hear from, just make sure that they weren't like an all-pro. That's really the only stipulation.
But also, like, I would also like, if they have a Twitter account, like, if they have over 10,000 followers, it's probably a no-go. That's...
Yeah.
Just a hunch.
You got to find that certain range where they're, like, good, but, like, not too good. So, make sure to follow that. Make sure to watch those. Give us feedback. Let us know who you'd like to see next. Also, while you have a chance, since everybody's got their stimulus check and still got a little bit left over, go check out Smack Apparel. Smack's the leading unlicensed pro and college sports apparel company in the United States. For over 20 years, Smack has designed some of the most iconic and memorable rivalry gear in the sports world, from the anti-hurricane Sucks to Be You to the Nationals' Bracelets design. You're guaranteed to get a compliment at your next tailgate. Unlike licensed sports apparel, Smack doesn't need approval from teams or organizations. They create the designs that illustrate how diehard fans are feeling. So if you're tired of wearing just a basic logo or generic jersey for your favorite team, check out smackapparel.com and use promo code WALKON, one word, for 20% off your next order.
All right. So we'll continue on with our drafting of the our all-time college football teams. This week, as I mentioned on our last episode, we are going to do defensive linemen. Again, we are picking five, and it will continue again, five every week for different positions. We are doing defensive linemen this week, and next episode will be offensive linemen. So that one's going to be fun because there's not really any statistics. So that one's going to be an interesting one to see. We did a little rock, paper, scissors determination before the show, and Jake is going to pick first. I will go second, and then intern Gibble will go three. Snake draft as usual if you're new here, until we get to five players, and that will be added onto our roster. So, Jake, why don't you go ahead and take it away and get us started on this draft.
I'm going to take Ndamukong Suh. You know, former Nebraska defensive lineman, absolute monster in the interior there, had a total of 24 sacks in his career and 49 and a half tackles for a loss, four interceptions and two touchdowns as a defensive tackle, which is absolutely outstanding. His senior year, he had a total of 85 tackles, which is more than some linebackers get in a season. Finished second in the Heisman race, absolute dominant there. Really, really good player in college. Couldn't really justify not picking him this early.
All right, that's a good pick. I had a number two on my board. We're going to go with number one on my board here for my selection. The all-time sack leader in the NFL and also one of the greatest sack artists in college football history. I'm taking Bruce Smith, defensive end from Virginia Tech, 1984 Outland Trophy winner, 1984 Consensus All-American, had 22 sacks in his junior season in 1983, 46 total in his career, 71 tackles for losses total. He is a pro and collegiate Hall of Famer. No offense to Michael Vick, but probably the greatest player to come out of Virginia Tech. I will go Bruce Smith here with my first pick.
All right.
Now Gibble's turn to pick all Ohio State guys.
See, I could just pick both Bosa brothers right here, but I'm not going to.
Shocker of the year.
I need to be a little bit better than that. So I'm going to take Reggie White. Well, let's see. Why not? He's a pretty good guy.
Are you sure about this one? You don't seem like you're positive on who you're taking.
Yeah, it seems like a quick decision here. Like,
you know, I mean, he's number one on my big board here. I think I don't really have a great method to my madness because my
brain doesn't work
great. Anyway, Reggie White had 293 tackles during his collegiate career, 32 sacks, and 19 tackles for a loss. Had 4 fumble recoveries, 7 passes batted down. He was SEC Player of the Year, All-American, All-SEC. His numbers retired with Tennessee. Yeah, and also, you know, a Philadelphia Eagle, so that helps too.
Well, you got another pick. And,
yeah, you got another one, man. You're still on the clock.
I know, right? Let's see here. We got to pick number 2. Let's go with Warren Sapp, because he's pretty good, too. He was a Heisman finalist.
You know, you wouldn't pick somebody that sucks.
I know, right?
Just like to point that out there.
Yeah. All right, he was a Heisman finalist, Lombardi Award winner, Bronco Nagurski Trophy winner, Big East Defensive Player of the Year, All-American, just pretty much got all of the awards with Miami there.
Stealing a hurricane from me.
Yeah.
All right. That's a tough look. All right. I'm going to go back up my board. This one's a little bit tougher this week because you guys aren't leaving all my top guys on the board like you did for the wide receiver one. We're going to go to number 3 on the board here. I'm taking T Sizzle, Terrell Suggs, defensive end, Arizona State. In 2002, he won the Hendricks, Lombardi, and Nagurski Awards. Unanimous All-American, had an NCAA record 24 sacks that season. Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. Probably a future College Football Hall of Famer. I'm taking T-Sizzle here with my second pick.
All right, my second pick. I'm going to go with ESPN analyst David Pollack.
I was debating between T-Sizzle and Pollack because I knew one of them wasn't going to get back to me.
Yeah. I was hoping I could get both of them. SEC Player of the Year. He was a 3-time All-American, 3-time SEC, won the Benarik, the Hendricks, the Lombardi, the Lott. You name the award on defense, he probably won it. All-time Georgia record with 36 sacks, one of the greatest defensive linemen. Such a shame that his professional career got cut short because of injury. But his talent is undeniable. Absolute stud there for Georgia. You know, probably the best edge rusher out of Georgia ever. Second one here. I think we're going to fill out the interior. I think I'm going to take Glenn Dorsey here. Glenn Dorsey out of LSU. 2-time All-American, 179 tackles, 27 for a loss, 13 sacks. 5th overall draft pick. He was one of the reasons that LSU was able to win the national championship in 2008 because he just absolutely ate up the entire interior there. He was unstoppable. He finished 9th in the Heisman rankings, or in the voting, actually, just to show how much of an impact he had on that LSU team, because that LSU team might have been their best offensive team in that decade. That's not saying much because Zach Mettenberger was leading there. But Glenn Dorsey was the pride and joy of that LSU team in 08.
All right. Good pick there. I like the idea. I'm going to go interior here. I need myself a defensive tackle here. I'm going to take Steve Empman, defensive tackle from Washington, helped lead a resurgent Huskies team to a national championship in 1991. He was a consensus All-American, Outland, Lombardi, and Willis Award winner, Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year, and finished 4th in the Heisman voting, and is also a College Football Hall of Famer. So Steve Empman is my pick number 3 for me.
Oh, man, now I got to pick 2 here. Let's see.
Yeah, it's kind of how it works.
I know how it works. I think we're going to go with another College Football Hall of Famer, Teddy Bruschi, because, you know, Hall of Famers tend to be pretty great players. Played for Arizona. had the Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year, won the Morris Trophy as the big league's best defensive lineman. 2-time finalist for the Lombardi Award, had 74 tackles for a loss, which was sixth in FBS history, all conference three times, and led the Wildcats to three bowl berths under Coach Dick Tomey. So yeah, Teddy Bruschi is going to be number three. And, you know, I think we're going to go ahead and take, we are going to take a Bosa brother because, you know, we need somebody for Ohio State here. So we're going to take Joey. He played a little bit more in college than his brother did.
Well, yeah, because the other brother got injured.
I am well aware. Not great. Happy about it. So yeah, Joey Bosa, he was a Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, two-time All-American, two-time Defensive Lineman of the Year, two-time first-team All-Big Ten, ended his career with 51 tackles for a loss, 26 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, and a pick. And is now a San Diego Charger. So, Joey Bosa.
All right. Swinging it back my way here. We're going to go up to number six on my board here. Dwight Freeney, defensive end, Syracuse, 2001 unanimous All-American, two-time All-Big East, had 17 and a half sacks in 2001. And also, most notably, once sacked Michael Vick 4.5 times in one game, which in the college, both versions of Michael Vick, really, it is a super impressive statistic. So I'll take Dwight Freeney here to give me another edge rusher.
So my next one, I'm going to take a two-sport athlete in college, played on a pretty good basketball team. I'll take Julius Peppers out of North Carolina.
Good pick.
First team all ACC. He was the sack leader in 2000. First team all ACC in 01. Nagurski finalist, won the Banerik, won the Bill Willis, won the Lombardi Trophy. Just an absolute stud when he was in college. Finished with 30 and a half sacks. Started all but one game. Had 5 interceptions and 5 forced fumbles, along with 42 quarterback hurries. And he had 3 touchdowns as well. And on top of that, he played basketball for North Carolina, where he scored 21 points and had 10 rebounds in a game against Penn State in an NCAA tournament game. So I'll take the multi-sport athlete in that one.
It's a good pick, especially if we just adjust and start playing basketball on the fly.
Exactly. If we, you know, put our teams on basketball courts, I'm winning for sure. My next one, Gibble took an Ohio State player, but I'm going to take the all-time leading sack leader at Ohio State, who also happens to be the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, Mike Vrabel. He was, you know, part of the All-Century team in 2000, an All-American, 36 total sacks, 66 tackles for a loss. He's in the Ohio State Athletics Hall of Fame. He wasn't, obviously became a linebacker in the NFL, but at Ohio State, he was a consensus first-team All-American, and he was the Big Ten Defensive Lineman of the Year in 95 and 96, becoming only the second player to ever win it twice. So we're making our team multi-purpose, that occasionally if we want to just coach a team too, we can go for that too.
I like it. Man, this is a tough one. There's two guys and need another defensive tackle here. And I'm just going to go way off the rails here. With my last pick, I'm taking 1929 consensus All-American, Bronco Nagurski, defensive tackle from Minnesota. Also played fullback, which he's probably most notable for, college football and NFL Hall of Famer. In 1999, Sports Illustrated named him to their first team All-Century team as a defensive tackle. Also was a pro wrestler on the side, was a champion in that. So, yeah, I mean, you want to go multi-sport athletes here? I'm taking Bronco Nagurski, going to play both sides of the ball, might wrestle your quarterback a little bit. You know, good luck with that. Stealing a little bit of intern Gibble's shine from his early Great Depression era football. So,
well, if we did the decathlon, he would definitely be leading that.
Yeah, well, Bronco Nagurski.
I really like that pick. That's my next guy. I was honestly thinking about taking him. Now that you took him, I think I'm going to round out my team with Elvis Dumervil, Louisville defensive end. Holds the single season sack record with 20. Let's see. He won the Nagurski Ted Hendricks Award, Big East Defensive Player of the Year, and an All-American in his career. All-around great player. Finished his career with 151 career tackles, 42.5 tackles for a loss, and 32 sacks. Going with Elvis Dumervil to round out the team.
I'm confident my team's better than yours this week.
It might be.
I'm confident my team's better than Gibble's every week, but somehow he still wins the votes occasionally.
I didn't win the last one.
We have a lot of Nebraska fans, so that's why I think I have a good shot this week, because they all love Ndamukong Suh still.
I'll be honest with you. The one I was debating between, looking for another defensive tackle, was between Nagurski and Rich Glover, the defensive tackle from Nebraska, during the heyday of the black shirts in the 70s, like early 70s. But I was just like, man, I got to go Nagurski here and get real deep into it. A couple ones I left off here. Number 9 on my board, I hated to leave him off because he's a Hurricane, but I had Ted Hendricks here. I had Jadeveon Clowney on my big board, Bubba Smith, Mean Joe Green, Merlin Olsen, Ed Jones, and Randy White. I had 18 guys total I had listed down here on my big board for picking here.
I considered Jadeveon Clowney. That was really the only other one that you guys didn't select that I considered as well.
Yeah, I had Jonathan Allen on mine too. Alabama defensive tackle.
Ooh, that was a good one, actually. I kind of forgot about him.
And, I mean, another Eagle, Chris Long. He was pretty good. And then, obviously, I had Chase Young on the board, but went with Bosa instead.
I'm really surprised you didn't go Bosa, Chase Young.
I thought about it. That would have been really fun to have, but I went against
you. Could have beat me to it and went Bosa, Chase Young, Mike Vrabel, Vernon Golston.
I could have, but
Vernon Golston, notable NFL legend.
I should probably hit him up, see what he's up to.
Yeah, that's a good one to find.
There you go.
All right. Now that we've wrapped that up, intern Gibble will make the graphic probably in a week and a half, whenever he decides to get around to it. And Jake will post it on the Twitter for you guys to vote. I'm going to try and collect as many Minnesota fans and tag them all to get me to win this one with Bronco Nagurski. Outside of that, we'll be back with offensive linemen in 2 weeks with our next episode. Jake, what kind of listener questions do we have?
Okay. Do you want to go with a normal one or a weird one first?
A little good, little bad, you know, let's mix it around.
All right, we'll just start with my normal one.
Nice milkshake about it.
So given the draft placement, which NFL rookie running back is set up for the best success in their NFL career? And this is a two-part question. And who should we expect to be the top running back next year?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because A, he's with the Chiefs.
They're going to score 9 million points.
Yeah, somebody pointed it out this week. It's the perfect thing for him to go to, because you saw how great he was in the LSU offense. Not necessarily the offenses are super similar, but they are similar in terms of like the power around him. So Helaire can kind of do whatever he has to do, and is likely going to get range to roam around a bit, like he did at LSU this past year. And also like the comparisons to Brian Westbrook, who was very successful with Andy Reid, and Andy Reid seeing that exact comparison and wanting to go with Helaire kind of signals to me that he's going to be a very prominent part of that offense moving forward. I think you can put J.K. Dobbins in here as well. I'm very interested to see DeAndre Swift, because if Matt Stafford can ever have a consistent running game, with a really good running back. The Lions offense could be very good, but you're also kind of still hoping for a lot out of that situation. So, yeah, I would go with Hilaire based on where they went, and Dobbins probably a close number two, getting to play behind Ingram for a little bit, and then probably take over any year or two down the line as the main starter in a good Baltimore offensive attack. Outside of that, in terms of next year, I still think it's ETN. ETN, had he come out this year, I would have had him as my number one running back. I love Travis ETN. I think there's a case for Chuba Hubbard and Najee Harris as well as a couple other guys. But ETN's my number one for next year right now, with pretty much with a bullet until the season gets started and we see what happens.
Just to be different, I like Jonathan Taylor in the Indianapolis offense because they have a pretty good offensive line. You know, you see what he did at Wisconsin. That was built around, you know, having a strong, powerful offensive line. I don't think he'll have quite the success he did in college, but I think he will still have a pretty good rookie season. And I mean, ETN's a stud, but I think Najee Harris isn't that far behind.
Yeah, I mean, with the top five running back, like the big five running backs this draft class, it's hard to say anything negative because Cam Akers goes where Todd Gurley was super successful before injuries kind of derailed him in that Sean McVay offense, and I think he's going to fit in really well there. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to have a negative look at any of them right now, especially the Lions need to have consistent play at the running back position, and DeAndre Swift as both a pass catcher and out of the backfield is very good. So I think he's going to fit in really well there with Matt Stafford to give him another option and some relief in a passing game as well. So it's hard to really say, but yeah, Lair is definitely my number one there.
Any thoughts at all, intern?
Yeah, I mean, you took my Jonathan Taylor pick. I really like him with the Colts. Their offensive line just feels like it's basically a Big Ten line with a bunch of trees that just are going to move everybody out of the way for the running back and give the quarterback a lot of protection. So I feel like Jonathan Taylor could have a pretty dang good year this year. Chuba's going to be my pick just to be different for next year. He was a absolute stud this season. I feel like he's going to be just as good, if not better, next year. So, I mean, while ETN's probably the favorite, I feel like he's not that far behind.
All right, let's go to Meyer's other question. What is the best stadium food, football watching snack, and football watching beer?
Best stadium food. I mean, I'd probably go just a standard hot dog. To be honest with you, I don't eat a lot of stadium food when I go to games for whatever reason. But if I do, a lot of the times it's a hot dog. If we want to get super specific, it's crab fries at an Orioles game.
Yes.
But yeah, outside of that, I really don't. Because I found in recent years that, like, as much as I like chicken tenders, they can be either really good or really bad. I feel like stadium wise, hot dogs are always much better at a stadium than they are any other time you make them. So
it might just be the environment, honestly.
It might be, but I think, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. And it's, I don't know. It's going to make people think I'm like the worst human being. Just roller hot dogs in general, just for whatever reason, are just better. Like than anything outside of like maybe grilling, but I don't know, a roller hot dog usually always hits the spot, and that's usually how they do them up at those games anyway, so that's probably why. But yeah, for that one I would go with that. Football eating snack at home, buffalo chicken dip. Always a staple at your house, Jake.
Yes, it is. Captain, my dad makes it every time.
But that's always a staple. That and tortilla chips with it. I mean, that's always a good go-to. It's not too big. It's something you can kind of snack on casually. Obviously, wings are good there too. But And then in terms of beer, if I'm watching a game, I want something sort of light, not too much. I've said it before. I'll go Blue Moon because I can chug it if we want to do a drinking game, or I can casually sip it and have good flavor and stuff. It's not, you know, too much either way. But I always want something a little bit more lighter. I'm not trying to fancy it up and drink an IPA while I'm watching a college football game. So
you don't want any Dirt Wolf?
No Dirt Wolf.
Shout out Bernard.
Absolute worst option. Yeah, I think stadium food, I don't really eat too much when I go to an actual game. I'll usually either eat at tailgate or eat pregame at a sports bar or something, because everything is just overpriced in stadiums, so I don't tend to get food inside them. But when I do, it's either crab fries at an Orioles game or Chickies and Pete's down in Philly. So those are kind of my go-tos inside of a stadium, but you can't go wrong with a hot dog. Never. Or just popcorn. Popcorn's great in a stadium. Somehow it's better in a stadium or a movie theater than it is at home. Buffalo chicken dip is a great option. You can never go wrong with pigs in a blanket either. Those are pretty great. And as far as the beer, I'd either pick PBR or Yingling. Yep. Both you can chug and enjoy. If I'm feeling a little fancier, I'll go for that Blue Moon or some Shock Top or like a Line and Kugel or something, just because those are...
I'm drinking some Line and Kugels right now as we speak.
Those are quality.
They are.
We have Line and Kugel and Shock Top in the house right now.
Shock Top's always a good one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I used to work at some of the stadiums, I would always enjoy a nice like sausage with onions and peppers if I was like eating there. So I guess I'll go with that. When I'd work, that would usually be like my dinner, and I always enjoyed that. Snack, buffalo chicken dip, because my dad literally makes it for every game ever. Whenever there's a game on, he just finds an excuse for it. He probably has made it at least 3 times during quarantine for himself and eats the entire thing in one sitting. Just how he does. And beer, I mean, you guys already know where I'm going with this. It's the greatest beer of all time. It's PBR. I mean, it's beautiful. It's glorious. They make it PBR heavy now, like a 6.5% beer. Fantastic. You can get drunk faster off of PBR.
The only thing worse than a regular PBR is a PBR heavy.
That name also just doesn't sound great.
I will say another one, if I'm, because we want to talk about cheap beer here, my cheap beer go-to is Natty Bo 100% of the time.
Oh yeah.
Which ironically is owned by Pabst, so like it's
pretty much PBR.
You know, I'll shit on PBR all day, but Natty Bo's where it's at. Natty Bo's always got my heart.
Oh, what a beer.
All right, let's get to this weird one, because I really don't know how to answer this one. This is from No Names All Game. They're a Penn State podcast. It says, your life depends on a trial by combat. Who are you choosing to fight for you? And it can be really fictional, but no superheroes or anything unfair. I guess you can determine what anything unfair is. So give it whoever you pick is unfair.
Well, that stinks. I was going to choose the Mountain from Game of Thrones just because he was in the news recently, and also he's just absolutely massive.
I mean, yeah, it's a real person. I mean, I get the question is like nobody that's got like a superpower, like they're a basic human being. Like,
so I think Captain America is out.
Yes.
He's a superhero, but he's
a superhero.
Yeah. He's just a really strong human.
The Mountain's a good one. Yeah. Yep. I mean,
I'm just going to take the Rock, honestly.
Fair.
I think I got you beat.
Shit. This is a tough one. Christ almighty. I don't really know.
I know it's tough to think of just, all right, a normal person to defend me.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I am going to go the fictional route. I'll just take John Wick. He's going to kick your ass. And he's not a superhero, so like, yeah. I mean, if you want to get real technical, you could put Batman in here because he doesn't have a superpower.
He's just rich.
Yeah.
Does that mean I get Tony Stark?
No. The suit makes him OP.
that's true. I mean, it's I don't know.
It does say or anyone unfair. I think you could put Tony Stark in the anyone unfair.
He's the unfair. Like, if you're taking just Tony Stark and his brain, like, you're going to just lose. But if you're taking Tony Stark and he is wearing an Iron Man suit, then that's just completely unfair.
True.
It's in a battle.
Yeah, I mean, this is a question I would have to probably think about for like a week before I came to a right answer. But usually with stuff like this, it's John Wick's like the first name that kind of pops off of my head. So
right, let's get back to a semi-normal question. This one came in actually just at the last minute. Says, who's the favorite to win the ACC Coastal? Fun fact, I never know who's actually in the Coastal and who's in the Atlantic, and I have to look it up every time.
I'm a Hurricanes fan, and I don't even know who's in the Coastal. Like, it's not as cut and dry as, like, the Big Ten East and stuff like that. So it's...
It just feels like it's a mess.
It's literally always a mess. but based on the question, I don't even have to look. Who's the favorite? There's not a favorite, but I would assume, without looking at the odds, it's Miami. And that's what I'm going to roll with, because I've said it before. I expect this team to be pretty good this year. And it's always such a wide open division. What, seven different winners in 7 years. It's always so wide open, but I think right now, Miami's probably got the most talented roster, starting at the quarterback, working its way down. So I'll go with them. North Carolina's in there as well, with Sam Howell. But outside of those two, I'm not really sure, because Virginia loses Bryce Perkins and some other talent on the offensive side of the ball. So who knows what they're going to look like. Virginia Tech's always there, but who knows? Again, another team that we don't really know. So, yeah, I would have to go with either one of those two, but I'll stick with Miami, because I said it before, I expect them to be good this year with the offseason additions they made.
I don't know. Spin a wheel, and then you'll figure out who the winner is. I guess if I had to pick one,
yeah.
I don't know, North Carolina, I saw Sam Howell play at the bowl game, so we'll just run with that, because he looked really good there. Who knows?
Yeah,
he did. He did look very good in that bowl game against
Temple. Yeah, he was completing passes. I didn't know how they were.
In fairness, you can't really pump that up, because Temple also got the shit kicked out of him by Duke the year before.
I know. We're just losing the battle to Tobacco Road.
Yeah, I'm going to take UNC as mine. I mean, just to be not taking Miami, I feel like they're probably the favorite, but UNC seems like they have a pretty good base for next year. I don't know how much they lost, but their schedule is... I guess you could say on the easier side. They end the year with UConn, Pitt, BC, and NC State. So
wow, that feels like UConn in November. That's a real tough one.
I know, right? That's a scary one. Mark that down as a upset alert. So
the only upset is if they actually show up.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, last question we have here is from Paul Reach. I don't know how you say your last name. Raj Reach. I don't know. What is the right way to look at strength of schedule at any team's strength of schedule? So he wants to know, based off of, you know, an eight team conference schedule versus a 9 team, is there a right way to look at how we should look at strength of schedule?
So this is something I've always fought. The way I've always looked at it, I think a quality strength of schedule, if you're a conference like the ACC that runs 8 games, I think your 4 remaining games, you should have 2 Power 5 schools, a Group of 5 school, and then you can have an FCS school. Playing the FCS schools, I don't mind, as long as you're doing it in the first like 2 weeks of the season. Anything beyond that, SEC, is corny and bullshit. And for the Big Ten, who does 9, I think you could have an FCS, a Group of 5, and a Power Five, because you're playing an extra Power Five school anyway in the conference. So kind of counts that way. When you look at it, I think that's fine. I don't think you should have, you know, two Group of Five schools, two FCS schools, however you want to look at it. But when it comes to strength of schedule straight up like that, that's kind of the way I look at it for a quality schedule. Anything more than that, you know, you want to schedule three Group of Five or three Power Five schools, great. If you want to schedule two Group of Five schools instead of an FCS school, fine, whatever, that's better. But I think that's the minimum when I kind of look at it.
Yeah, I feel like strength of schedule is tough. I think it's, we always think about it on a right now basis, even though these teams are scheduling these guys like way out. But at the same time, when you have two and three FCS and Group of Five schools and you're one of the powerhouses in your conference, that just, you're just setting yourself up for cupcakes. Like it's a good warm-up game. It has to be done in the first 2-3 weeks of the season. Like you said, on the SEC needs to stop having an FCS school in the second to last week. That's just absurd. But I feel like if we're talking about strength of schedule by the end of the season, and kind of ranking it based on if we're trying to judge and differentiate between the top teams and saying who had a better strength of schedule, you have to look at those big games where you're playing a Power Five conference, and I think those need to, or Power Five conference opponent, those games need to have a little bit heavier of a weight than the Group of Five and FCS schools, no matter how badly you beat them.
Yeah, I think everybody should play the same amount of Power Five schools if you're a Power Five team. If you have an 8-team schedule, you know, you need to play two Power Five. You have a 9-team, you play at least one Power Five. If you want to play more, that's up to you.
You should have 10 of your 12 games should be against Power Five schools if you're a Power Five school.
If you want to play 12, be my guest, but that's not what you shouldn't be required to. The other thing is, this is a whole different rant, is stop scheduling people 10 years in advance. There's really no need for it. There's no scheduling purpose to say that where you need to be playing in the year 2030, which is not necessary, because you're setting yourself up for strength of schedule being everything should be within 2 or 3 years at most. Basketball figures out to do it every year. How do you take forever? How do you need to schedule 10 years in advance? Because, for instance, the border war that was just scheduled, if you wanted to look at the strength of schedule, Kansas is going to be really good in 10 years, but you're scheduling now thinking they're going to be a cupcake.
Okay, Jake, whatever you say.
You get what I'm saying, though, is, you know, if you schedule somebody, if you schedule Georgia right now, yeah, they're really good right now, but if you schedule them in 2033, there's a really good chance Kirby Smart's not there in 15 years. So what you're scheduling for, you're just scheduling the brand. You're not scheduling if they're actually going to be good or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is another thing that's kind of annoying, is getting stuck into that, you know, let's schedule people 10 years out or whatever and hope they're good.
Ohio State had that happen because they played at home and home with Cal like a couple of years ago, and Cal sucked. They were awful. But when they got scheduled, Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback at the time, and they were really good. 10 years later, they couldn't even make a bowl game.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's – I definitely agree with that. That's something that kind of needs to be rectified, because it's so hard to look at strength of schedule and have a perfect way to look at it by season's end. It's the same argument with the LSU and Texas game last year. Like, if you're counting Texas – whatever. There's no perfect way to look at anything, really. Cause yeah, the schedules are being done years in advance. Who knows if those teams are going to be good, you know, down the road or anything like that, you know? And just, you know, you'll get to it. And I mean, it still counts as a Power Five game, but yeah, like Ohio State and Cal, it's like, by the time the game comes there, it's like, okay, it's a Power Five school, but they aren't a good Power Five school. So, you know, well, shame on Ohio State because they're not scheduling good outside of their conference. I think the scheduling good aspect of it is, you know, something like that, you kind of have to toss out the window, because you're hoping for a lot there. And it's hard to, like, I'll go against the school if they're scheduling a bunch of like group of five schools, or something like that. But yeah, I mean, the way the schedules are made now, if you're putting Cal on your schedule 15 years from now, or you're putting Georgia, or you're putting Georgia Tech, or you're putting whoever, and hoping they're going to be good, and they end up being like a 2-10 school at that time or whatever, it's tough to look at and say, well, should have scheduled better, because, you know, you're making that schedule way too far in advance, and you can't really control what the other teams are going to look like.
That's all the questions we have for today.
All right, folks. Well, again, vote later on in the week for our who had the best defensive line. And keep an eye out for Jake's half-hour huddle series going forward with some more guests this week. Check it out on the YouTube page, which Intern Gibble is.
Walk on Redshirts.
And remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, which is.
Walk on Redshirts or the Walk on Redshirts. I think Instagram is the Walk on Redshirts.
There we go. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks with our offensive line draft, some more news, and some more questions. So throw out whatever you have. Again, obviously, if you couldn't tell, it doesn't have to be college football related right now. We're in a bleak time with not a whole lot to go. And then we'll also be back next week with some more watch-alongs as well. We took the week off, some stuff going on. So we'll see you guys in 2 more weeks. Have a good one.